This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:06. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Kelvin and Hezriel. And for our next story, we're bringing it back to Malaysia. Amid the current political uncertainty, Fitch Solutions has released a forecast report on the country's economic growth for the next decade.
Yep, and it looks pretty bleak, Kel. The report says political instability may reduce the flow of foreign direct investment. This means that real GDP growth is projected to be 3.4% versus 6.4% for the last decade.
Yep, and since BN lost power in G14, they expect the federal government to change frequently in the next few years. This is because fragile coalitions with slim majorities will likely be the new normal.
But that's not all. They added that this will also slow policy reforms, so affirmative action for Bumiputras will likely remain. This could cause a brain drain and negatively impact Malaysia's growth potential as non-Malay talents go abroad to look for jobs.
Well, who knew that our political situation would affect our country, huh?
So that's the thing. I've got mixed feelings about this because politically, I think it's healthy because I see it, and I think it was mentioned in the report that these next 10 years are perhaps a transition for a democracy to mature, right? Mm-hmm. And for because to an extent, fragile coalitions are good for the people and for to have it's good to have a strong opposition so that you know, there can be negotiations when it comes to policies. There can be more constructive debate because the government isn't you know, too confident and perhaps might not be too complacent as they would if they had, say, a supermajority.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, of course, there's this report and it's certainly not good for foreign investors to be hesitant to go into Malaysia, especially at a point when I think globally businesses are looking to perhaps pull out of China and not rely on them too much, right, after COVID-19. So there's sort of two sides and two tensions pulling at each other.
Yeah, and I also take the point that the constant power shifts in Malaysia as we transition away from single party rule are among the things that will weigh down the economy. And you know, I take that point, but I think at the same time, perhaps what should also be considered is the fact that, you know, for a long time, that's what Barisan Nasional promised, right? That, you know, vote us in again, we're good for the economy because we're constantly stable.
Yeah, exactly.
We are going to maintain these policies, and you know what you're getting. You know, business owners, entrepreneurs, whoever wants to think about investing here, they know roughly more or less what they're getting into because it's been the same, right? And it was the same for such a long time. Having said that, though, I think that might not necessarily be the case, right? You know, I don't know where we're going to move to politically in the next month, next year, maybe even tomorrow. But I'm hoping that where we're headed towards is a place where parties, you know, politics isn't so much decided by big personalities and big parties anymore. Rather, they're coming to a consensus. You know, they might be, you know, to me, they might be a bit less dominant. They might be a bit less you know, steady sometimes, but I think there is sometimes strength in that. But I'm also like thinking more so of the models that exist elsewhere, right? Where they have to come up with coalitions together with parties with very specific agendas. They have to work together with parties that represent the environment. They have to work with parties that represent labor rights, for example. But we don't quite have that here yet. So I'm hoping where we'll develop is in a place where there are special interest groups that can kind of take up those positions. You know, a good sign of that is probably with Syed Saddiq's new political party, MUDA.
Yeah, and I think alongside that point, Kel, it's also perhaps important to address this never-ending issue of affirmative action. And I'm just, you know, I just wonder, would economic growth be as slow if the government does change frequently, but if perhaps the affirmative action is addressed in such a way that there can be a more even playing field for all Malaysians from all backgrounds, because this brain drain issue has been a problem even before this report came out, right? It's been a long-standing concern even with the previous Barisan National government. So it looks like perhaps it might just, you know, worsen as things perhaps might have looked, perhaps while there were potential openings with the previous Pakatan Harapan government to perhaps look at alternative ways to even the playing field.
After this, we're going to speak with Tricia Yeo, CEO of Ideas for Her Thoughts. Stay tuned for that conversation. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:14 on the Evening Edition with Kelvin and Hezriel, and we are looking at a Fitch Solutions forecast report that said that political instability may reduce the flow of foreign direct investment, which also eventually leads to smaller and lower economic growth. So we're now going to talk about this report together with Tricia Yeo, CEO of Ideas. Tricia, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Hi, thanks for having me.
To start off, how does political stability impact economic growth?
Well, I think there have been many sort of these indices that track what attracts FDI and attracts investors to come into any country. And the top 2 to 3 items are usually, say, like as the Fitch report has pointed out already, political stability, economic stability, and there'll be other related things, right? So talent and, of course, strong and robust institutions. But in order to address your question specifically, I think it's political stability determines which government is in place. And the government of the day sets the policy direction, sets the strategic and economic direction of the country. And I think what investors are essentially looking for is dependency. So can the governments of the day provide that kind of dependency? And they don't want things to change, you know, overnight and multiple times if the government changes. So on that note, I think what's important to understand is that in many countries where governments can change, and we recognize that we are operating in a democratic system where governments can change. So then the question is, with a government change, do the rules and regulations also change with the government? And I think in Malaysia, in a country like ours, where for more than 50 years we have been attuned to having a single party or a single coalition in the form of Barisan Nasional all the way up to 2018 when they fell, as we know, we did not have to think about the difference between the institution of the political party and the institution of government, right, the bureaucracy. And so it is only within these few years that we're really starting to question, and I think it's actually a positive impact of what happened in 2018, in the sense that we recognize that, yes, governments can change, but, you know, would the institutions that support the political leadership necessarily need to change? And so in other countries where they have seen, you know, political turnover take place on a more frequent basis, where governments can change, what happens there is that there actually still is institutional stability. And so the question is, can we take opportunity now, the fact that we do have political instability, to say that the institution of government, of bureaucracy, can actually provide stability and improve state capacity in a way that can withstand the weather and the, you know, can weather the storm and the changes that take place with political, turmoil, which is what we're seeing today.
That being said, Tricia, the previous BN government was stable, yet experts pointed out that certain policies relating to 1MDB and so on harmed the economy. How would you respond to that?
So I think it goes back to what I said. So yes, BN provided that political stability. Investors knew exactly what they were getting. However, it's not enough to provide political stability. So there are multifactorial things to think about. And so what happened with 1MDB, it showed you that there could be a huge crack in the system where the institutions were not robust enough to withstand the, you know, we call it for what it is, a political corruption that took place on a grand scale. And if that could happen with one GLC or one state-owned enterprise, then, you know, it means that there were not sufficient rules and regulations in place, nor was there, you know, monitoring, enforcement, compliance to make sure that more such SOE or GLC fraud would not take place. So if there could be one MVB, then the question is, you know, how many more of one MVBs are there in the system if we do not have the checks and balances in place? So I think that that was what sent a very bad signal to the rest of investors, that with this kind of huge institutional failure within the system, that again, it goes back to dependability. Could we then depend on the system to safeguard the interests of private companies, including investors, in a way that treated them all equally?
Right. And is there evidence to suggest that the trajectory of the economy under the former Pakatan administration would look different than the one projected by Fitch Solutions?
Well, of course, the trajectory of Pakatan Harapan administration was, fortunately, or you know, it was not hampered by the COVID-19 pandemic. So I think we have to admit that what has happened this year has a direct impact on the economic forecast of the country moving forward. So PH did not quite have to deal with that. However, you know, pandemic or not pandemic aside, I think what the pandemic has done, it has just showed us and pointed out, perhaps accelerated, the structural vulnerabilities that our economy was already facing. And it's sort of a situation at the moment where we have to look ourselves squarely in the face and to address the fundamental problems, many of which was addressed by the Fitch report, by the way. And if we do not address these structural problems now, then what we'll see is moving forward, we will lose out. So the kind of work that we've done at IDEAS as well, we've met a lot of people, and some of our reports say this, that unless we take serious action today, we will risk losing out regionally. And let's not forget that while the pandemic has hit all countries, you know, some of them equally, but, you know, some worse than others, our competitors are within the region are rising up probably much more quickly and much more efficiently, I would say, than we are ready to do. And so it really is, I mean, this year, 2020, I think is a turning point for many countries. But the question is really, will there be the political will and the institutional capacity to do that?
Now, there, one thing that's on a lot of people's minds, of course, is whether an election might be called soon. How would that impact our country economically in the immediate term?
I think in the immediate term, there will be a sort of sluggish. I mean, you know, we are still emerging from the pandemic. I know people are starting to talk about it as economic recovery. I think we are not quite there yet, but hopefully if we can keep the cases at bay, then we will be slowly and steadily on the uptick of the recovery curve. Having said that, I believe that many things are actually not moving because there is speculation of an upcoming election. And perhaps it might be in the interest of our own country's economic future to do it quickly and sort of get it over and done with so that investors can have a more predictable future. I mean, it's not just investors, right? So you're also referring to government agencies and, you know, ministries, and many of them, I believe, from what I have been hearing, would also be in slightly in that wait-and-see position. And the kinds of reforms that are needed, some of them which have been announced by the Prime Minister, and of course, we are expecting and hopefully we will see the final document of the Shared Prosperity Vision 2030 and the 12 Malaysia Plan that will be announced very soon by the EPU. So all these documents will contain something of the need for institutional reforms or structural reforms. And I'm concerned that, you know, despite these great efforts at wanting reforms to take place, because there is that highly uncertain political dynamics taking place at the highest levels, that even their own reforms that they're trying to institute will not happen. So I do believe that having it sooner rather than later, I mean, of course, one would have to also measure that against the public health risk, would be better to provide a more long-term stability.
Right. And on that note, the report also highlights that political instability is a likely deterrent to foreign investors. What are your thoughts on this, given that, you know, there's some attempts to try to get that in, right? That in the Punjana recovery, for example, there's been policies there that heavily subsidize taxes for foreign investors.
Yeah, I know on this issue of providing tax exemptions to FDIs, I think it plays some role. And of course, it's one of the first questions that companies will want to ask when they try and search for which country in the region they want to come into. So I would say it is important, and it's a positive sign that, you know, these factors are still being recognized by the government. But I would like to also say that I would not believe that that is the fundamental priority when investors are concerned. Tax exemptions, I mean, and many countries are also doing that. So how can we actually compete with Vietnam, with Singapore? So the other factors need to come into play much more so than just providing tax exemptions.
Now, another issue raised is how affirmative action will result in a brain drain, which will likely impede Malaysia's growth potential. What kind of impact does this have on the economy?
Well, on the economy, I suppose it's, like I said in the very beginning of the conversation, right, that it's not just political stability, economic stability, but also the search for good talent that investors are looking at. You know, they want to know whether you have a workforce that is able to contribute, you know, intellectually to the work, whatever level it is that they're looking for. And if the best of our people, the cream de la cream of our, you know, graduates or young working professionals actually decide to leave the country in search of better opportunities in neighboring countries or elsewhere, that means that, you know, number one, we lose out on the value added that they can provide back to the economy in any of the industries that they might be contributing to, whether it's in, high-end manufacturing or even forming their own companies, plugging into the MNCs. So that's one. And then the second thing, of course, is that if we don't have the high level of talent that are contributing to the companies, we also lose out in terms of our fiscal powers, right? Our abilities, because then they will not be probably paying like a high level of personal income tax that does contribute to the government coffers at the end of the day. But I think more importantly, what does that mean? What signal does that send if we are not addressing the main concerns of the most talented people in Malaysia? It means that we are not adequately recognizing the talent and the value add that they can provide. And it also means that the amount of investment that Malaysia is putting into the education system, we are not deriving the best value out of that. So we invest in the education system, we create like a really good pool of graduates, but then they're not coming back into our system to contribute back to the economy.
Tricia, we have shy of a minute, but you know, when you said all that, I'm still finding it a bit difficult to imagine the true impact of brain drain, right? Because it's not something you gain and then lose. It's something that just isn't there, because they move before you have a chance to measure them. How can we make it more visible so that at least it's, you know, to the government, something that's more pressing that they have to solve immediately?
That's a good question. I mean, I think Talent Corporation that was formed many years already now was trying to do that. But you are right that I have not seen like a sort of quantitative approach taken of what we've lost, essentially kind of measuring what the opportunity cost has been for Malaysia, right, in our brain drain. That's something that perhaps we could do. But in answer to that question, I think what we can do is actually kind of track and trace the people who are graduating and who are moving out, and tracing the kinds of jobs that they're having at the moment overseas, and making a sort of like a comparative table versus, you know, what they would be doing or could be doing in Malaysia. But other than that, I think, yeah, figuring out a methodology of quantifying what the loss has been would be a great idea. Thank you.
Well, when the report comes out, we look forward to it, Tricia.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Have a good evening.
You too. Thanks for weighing in. That was Tricia Yeo, CEO of IDS. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.